Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this could be a rainy 2.5 days, as I understand it. Rain coming in later this morning and this afternoon, most of tomorrow intermittently, and then mostly Saturday morning, which is not good because they got some stuff scheduled. But we'll see how it plays out. We might be able to get that Children's Hospital parade in or maybe delay it. I don't know what the plans are, but we'll find out and let you know as soon as we do. Hara Poramata joins us right now, an assistant professor of operations research and statistics at MIT. We saw this story at time.com, and it got our attention about AI and politics and social media. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I am okay. Thanks for taking the time with us. You know, I'm looking at the headline here. AI is transforming politics, much like social media did. I think sometimes people conflate social media with AI. So maybe we'll start by talking about the difference.
Yes, of course. So social media are platforms that, you know, we can go online, interact with our friends. Their main goal is that there is a network of people around us that we connect, we either know them in real life or they are, you know, internet friends. And we build this network of people around us and we just, you know, exchange ideas and we can chat and also see their posts, see their pictures, see the music that they put out. It's just a network of people at its core. When we talk about AI, artificial intelligence, the broad goal of AI is to build algorithms that can do things that humans do, but more effectively and better in some sense. So modern artificial intelligence systems are what we call, you may have heard in the news about generative AI. They are all these like chatbots like ChatGPT and Gemini and Claude that you can go online and prompt it, ask a lot of questions that you want to learn either about science or like other things around you. But that's the core difference, I would say. It's this like network structure that we see in social media as opposed to, you know, a single human interacting with an AI system nowadays.
So it seems like even though I might be a friend of Hara Poramata on social media and you give me something or tell me something, I shouldn't even make it about you. Let's make it about Joe Black. And I see his social media post and I believe what he says because I think I know he knows what he's talking about, although he may not when it comes to these larger language models. I might think that it's unbiased, but I don't know. Does anybody know who is behind those large language models or who's putting the information in there or how the information is being selected?
Right. That's a great question. I think that there are a couple of things to distinguish here. Like these large language models are AI systems that are what we call trained in a big corpus of training data. And this training data can be data that these models found on the internet, on different encyclopedias. We don't know exactly what goes in the training data of these models. Now, the other thing that's also true is that all of these models right now, the biggest ones that we have in the U.S., they come from companies that have stated their commitment to really try to do, you know, good by society, try to suppress misinformation, suppress conspiracy theories. So they have their own, you know, teams that are internal and they pose a lot of guardrails for these models. So I want to be very careful here and not assign intent, because, you know, although these models are still black box for all matters for the public, I do think that there's a significant effort from the companies to, you know, do good by society.
Explain so that. Question, I'm sorry, Professor. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to add to conclude that that doesn't mean that, you know, it's always perfect, right? And that's what our study shows, that these models do express some sorts of biases from time to time. But in our case study, most frequently these biases kind of like seem to reflect things that we would see from the general population through election polls. But yeah, please go ahead.
So when you say black box, define that. What do you mean by that?
When we talk about a black box model, roughly speaking, we talk about a model that, although we know what goes sometimes into its input, so like in a large language model, the input when we interact with the system is a prompt, what you type on the chatbot, you don't know what happens in the inner workings of the system that causes the model to start giving you a response, which is the output. So we call it a black box because we cannot like see exactly what happens in the algorithm underlying this whole process.
Do we not know because it's proprietary information, or do we not know because we just don't know?
So there are a couple of things here. Yeah, like to some extent, this is proprietary information. Like, although, and this is not something that's new to large language models. Like, if we think about the search engines, we don't know exactly. Like, we have an idea. Google had published some papers about their search engine, but we don't know exactly how these algorithms truly work, right? It's like proprietary information. So that's one thing. The other thing is that underlying all this technology is another big technology that you may have heard of, deep neural networks. Now, deep neural networks are highly complex, and they are also like hard to specify concretely because they come with billions of parameters. And actually, this is a blessing and a curse for AI nowadays, because these billion of parameters, these large language models, these deep neural networks, is really where these systems draw their powers from. This is the big breakthrough that allowed these systems to be so powerful. So, you know, on the one hand, it is a blessing because it allowed us to, it ushered us in this like new era of generative AI, but it is kind of a curse because we cannot understand completely what these models are doing.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Hara Podamata, Assistant Professor of Operations Research and Statistics at MIT, about these large language models, about black boxes, about when you ask AI for information about an election, is the information you're getting unbiased or not? Or if it's biased, is it because of what's in that so-called black box, or is it because of the question that you asked and it's tailoring its answer toward what it thinks you maybe want to hear? I guess. I don't know. We'll pick it up. We come back. 622 Traffic Now, WWL. 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Thanks for getting your Thursday morning started with us. We're talking to Hara Podamata, an assistant professor of operations research and statistics at MIT, about AI impacting politics and elections. So, Professor, if I can, maybe to get to the bottom line here, and then I'll go back if we have time. Mm-hmm. When it comes to these black boxes or the deep neural networks, if I were to get whomever it is, a select group of people into one room, would everybody there know everything that these deep neural networks can do? Or have they, pardon the use of words, developed a mind of their own where maybe not everybody can put all the pieces together?
So, once again, I want to be very careful about this. A lot of people, me included, and other experts in the field, we do understand like a lot of things about how these models work. The part that we don't understand belongs to, you know, some randomness, but it's not that we don't understand the inner workings. It's that these models are so complex that without actually running the model and interpreting the outputs, it's really, really hard to you know, understand which parameter was activated at which point to try to make a clear deduction of like, hey, that was a critical factor that influenced how this model behaved at this point. And this is the reason why a lot of people have started trying to do black box experiments with these models, black box auditing, trying to understand, you know, based on the outputs of these models, how can we understand more deeply what is happening? What are these models doing? I want to be very careful and steer clear of any of have these models developed a mind of their own. I think that this is not the correct way to view this, because these are still like, you know, human-made, you know, algorithms, human-made machines. And I know that there's a lot of debate in the community about whether artificial general intelligence is already here. I personally think that it's not already here. So, you know, take this like with a grain of salt.
Well, you've forgotten more about this than I could ever understand if I lived to be 185 years old, Professor. So I'll take your words very seriously. I hope you come back and talk about this, because it is we are just like on the. This is like the Neanderthal stage of artificial intelligence. Would that be accurate or not?
I wouldn't say Neanderthal, but I think we're going to see a lot more advances in the coming years. I think we are definitely in the like AI revolution stage right now. So yeah, month by month, we're going to be seeing new advances, I think.
Hope you come back. Thank you. Hara Potamanta, Assistant Professor of Operations Research and Statistics at MIT. We'll talk to Mike Strang, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, when we come back. 504-260-1870. What's the best cookie of all time? That's our survey today. Today's National Cookie Day. I give you the results after 9 o'clock. Text your answer in the 504-260-1870. It can be more than one if you want. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Got some rain coming in, 6:43, 17 till 7 later on today, and then for most of tomorrow on and off, and through Saturday morning, as I understand it. That's what they're calling for, but I guess we need it. Mike Strang, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, joins us as he does every Thursday morning. Morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, it is raining. That's good. A nice, good drizzle rain. You know, we are still far behind on the amount of rainfall. Some of the areas of the state are in moderate drought, believe it or not. But one of the things, you know, we've ended hurricane season, and, you know, there were 15 storms out in the Atlantic, and not a single storm came onshore on Louisiana.
Thank God.
Now, we saw this in 2023, but we didn't even have any severe tropical storms. Mm-hmm. You know, normally those tropical storms and storms bring a lot of moisture, a lot of rainfall. And we haven't seen this now. This is 2023 and again now in 2025. And so if you look at these, you know, particular patterns, and we have to adjust for that. Yeah, I'm glad we had no storms, no hurricanes hit. But again, that's one of the reasons that we had these dry conditions. And in other parts, you know, other states, it has a greater effect. You know, the lack of rainfall that has been not moving up, you know, from the southern states. And so, but again, we really, this rainfall is great. As you've probably been reading, I've been reading intently. We are anticipating, you know, a good crawfish season. That's what we're hoping to see. We had a very good crops. It had very good rice. And so moving forward, next we'll be looking at crawfish.
Yeah, where are we at right now with that? I'm just wondering the timing of this. You know, because we get all excited about Christmas and New Year's, and rightfully so, and then automatically our attention turns the next thing, Mardi Gras and crawfish, right? So I guess I'm wondering, where are we in the cycle right now? The rice has been harvested, if that's what they do with rice?
The rice has been harvested, both crops, because you get two crops of rice. You have the first crop, then what we call the ratoon crop, because it grows again, so you cut it actually twice. And then we reflood the fields, mm-hmm. and now what's happening is that the rice stubble, what's left, you know, is breaking down, and the crawfish are feeding. Now, there's a little bit of cold snap. The crawfish go back in their holes, and they'll kind of sit there. When it's cold, you lose a few days, because it's got to be warm. It's got to warm up, you know, stay up and get above, you know, that, you know, 50 degrees for them to come out and really start feeding. But I think we'll see some pretty good crawfish going into early February, and then real strong, you know, again during Lent. That's what we're looking for. So it is seasonal. You know, I have seen, you know, a few crawfish. I actually saw one flat of strawberries. Of course, they were greenhouse raised. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we start anticipating crawfish now. And, you know, and one of the things I said, look, if you can't find crawfish, they got some beautiful shrimp out there. Mm-hmm. You need to get some of our Louisiana shrimp. And I've had some, I had some wonderful gumbo last night, some Louisiana shrimp in there over with some Louisiana rice. But crawfish are coming. And that's one of the things, you get crawfish on the brain, and it doesn't go away.
No.
I mean, you've got to have the crawfish, but I tell you, they are coming, and we just can't wait. That is part of our tradition. You know, that's Mardi Gras and crawfish, right?
Yep.
It's coming.
Do you have, I know you're getting a trade mission coming up to UK. Tell me about that.
Yes, I'm headed back to England, and I'll be there, and we're bringing some industry officials with us, and some legislators will be meeting with DRAC. And DRAC, which is a huge company that buys wood products from us. If you look at DRAC, DRAC makes energy from wood, biomass. And one of the things we're going over to do is talk to British officials and also to industry officials so that they have a better understanding of the sustainability of our forest. And if you look at, they'll import about 7 million metric tons of biomass, 80% of that from the United States and 90% of that from Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas. Mississippi and Arkansas are lesser partners than we. We are the majority of that. And we have to, there's an, the issue over there is you're dealing now with the European Union and their, the deforestation issues, and they simply don't understand what a sustainable forest is. In other words, our pine plantations. So we're going over there to strengthen that, and we've been asked while we are there, we're going to be visiting with some rice millers and for the sale of rice. So we're going over there for the timber industry and for the rice industry and cementing those relationships. But the work we have to do is dealing with the Labor Party, the Conservative Party, the Reform Party, and also the smaller parties. So they just don't understand, you know, United States and Louisiana timber, because for them, you know, there are no timber real farms sustainable. They import all their wood. And so, again, to strengthen that, because this is a huge industry, you know, you're looking at $2 billion worth of wood pellets in the next few years. And it's a massive industry. And we'll be visiting their generation facilities as well, and also go into rice mills as well.
Mike, even though you explain them, it's like you show them, it's like, okay, look, here's the deal. See, we're planting these trees, and then we wait X amount of years, and we harvest them. But in the meantime, we're planting these trees, and they're growing, and then we harvest them. Then these trees have been planted, and they're growing, and they don't get it?
No, they don't, because, you know, I mean, fundamentally, I mean, down the public doesn't understand. The political figures don't understand. And so it's a whole mindset. And one of the things that I offered to do is maybe do a lecture series to their members of parliament and to their major universities, that we may be setting that up so we can really educate them and show them what a pine plantation is. You know, and I asked them yesterday on the phone call with officials in England, I said, you drink tea, right? They said, well, sure. I said, you use sugar? Well, sugar. Of course we do. I said, okay, that's a 5-year crop.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar is a 5-year crop, whereas we do the first harvest on our timber at 12 years. We completely harvest by 18, then we replant. So you have to think about it like you think about sugar cane and sugar. That's what our timber is. And again, I said, we have 15 million acres of planted pine plantations. And so you've got to change that fundamental mindset. And so I was surprised that they simply don't understand it, or, you know, you wonder, so, well, or do they not believe it, you know, because they've been told through social media and other things that cutting trees, you know, is a bad thing, but you have to cut our timber. Our sustainable forest, those trees die at year 30. I mean, they die, and then if there's no use for them, you're not going to replant and continue the cycle. So it's a very important that they understand the carbon positive of it, and the fact that it is an infinitely renewable resource, and to cement that and to keep that going.
All right, let me take a quick break. We'll pick it up. We come back with Mike Strain, 651, 9 till 7. Traffic now, WWL. 657, 3 till 7 Thursday morning. That's when we talk to Dr. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry and a beloved veterinarian on the North Shore. Mike, when it comes to Christmas trees and cold weather and safety, let's talk about that, please.
Yes. Now, you can buy and go choose and cut your fresh Louisiana Christmas tree, or you find a lot that it has Louisiana Christmas trees. You can look on the back page of your market bulletin. There's a nice list. Or go to southernchristmastrees.org, click on Louisiana, and they give you a listing. If you look in St. Tammany Parish, you know, there's Country Pines, there's Tiger Branch, Washington Parish, there's Steele, and Easterling. And you just click on it, tell you the time, the location. So go out and cut that tree with your family. Now, when you get it home, if you're not going to immediately put it into the stand, what you need to, you'll have to, don't let it dry out. Put it in a bucket of water. And then before you put it in the stand, saw off another quarter of an inch to a half an inch. And if you don't have a saw, use a file. Because what happens after you cut it, the sap will try to make, quote, a bandage, if you would think of that, on the bottom. And then you want to keep it in water. That's the main thing. They will continue to uptake water. Use one of the stands and add water to it. You got to check that water, you know, every couple days to make sure that you've got enough. That way it keeps it wet and moist. And then, you know, look, get some lights. If you have any problem with those lights, get some new lights, right? Don't take a chance. And when you go to bed at night, unplug it. The other thing is be cognizant of where you put it relative to a space heater or relative to the fireplace, because, you know, safety first. But the main thing, keep it moist, use good lights, turn the lights off at night. And, of course, what I always do, if there's going to be small kids in the house, you know, I'll take a piece of monofilament line, and I will literally tie it to the wall so they can't pull it down.
Smart man.
Have a fun, safe Christmas.
Smart man. Have a safe trip. Mike, real quick, today's National Cookie Day. You got a favorite cookie?
Oh, I absolutely do. That would be oatmeal with some chocolate in it. Yeah, me and Hootie like cookies. Now, I'm sure Grady would like one of those, too.
He loves cookies.
Oh, oatmeal cookies are, how you say, delicious.
You got it. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Have a safe travel. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. We'll take a look back at 2025, what stood out and what didn't. Then we'll talk with Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate, about early signing period. A lot coming up. Stay with us. Oh, and you can text your favorite cookie on this National Cookie Day, 504-260-1870. Give you the results at 9. 7:13, got a rainy day ahead of us, starting later on this morning, then through this evening, and then intermittently tomorrow, and then Saturday morning, but then it clears out, cools off. Daniel Erspammer joins us now, CEO of the Pelican Institute. Morning, Daniel. How are you?
Morning, Tommy. Great. Great to be with you.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me about the Pelican Institute for people that don't know.
Sure. The Pelican Institute is Louisiana's free market think tank. So our job is to research and understand policy conditions that allow people, every person in Louisiana, to flourish, and then work to educate the public and advocate for those ideas.
So when you look back at 2025, what were some of the highlights for you as far as the Pelican Institute goes?
Yeah, you know, lots of great stuff over the last couple of years. As we look at this last year, the biggest win, I think, for the state and for the people is something that didn't get a whole lot of hoopla, but something we call One Door to Work. And it streamlines and consolidates all of the various welfare safety net programs alongside the workforce programs to make the effort more efficient, make it easier for people to engage in the system, but more importantly, provides incentives and opportunity for people to move through the temporary safety net and get back to work. This is going to be transformational for how the state addresses poverty and a major transformation of the structure of government.
What does that look like for the people that are involved in it, Daniel, as far as their usage of it?
Yeah, so, you know, right now, if you're a recipient of government assistance, you may have to go to 10 or 12 different offices and deal with different eligibility checks and different case managers. And, you know, we don't really have a safety net or welfare system in the country. We have a whole bunch of disparate programs. This will allow all of those to work together. Regardless of your entry point into the system, you'll have one case manager that treats you like a whole person and designs assistance that best suits you and helps you get through the system and on to work and self-sufficiency.
What changed with tax policy in Louisiana in 2025?
Well, not much in 2025, but at the end of 2024, a significant package of bills passed that flattened the personal income tax, flattened the corporate income tax, eliminate at the top of the year in 2026, the franchise tax will finally be gotten rid of. And, you know, in 2025, the legislature passed a series of individual constitutional amendments that represent parts of what was a failed constitutional amendment two last year. Voters will make those decisions next spring.
Is Louisiana a more friendly place for people to do businesses, to do business rather than it was? And we did it. Now we're back with Daniel Erspammer. We're going to play the Who Are You game, but we got him back. Is Louisiana a better place to do business in this year, Daniel, than it was the previous year and the previous year and the previous year before that?
You know, there's no question about it. We have made progress to streamline some regulatory processes, clarify and provide stability to the tax code. You know, there's not to suggest there's not still a lot more work to do, but absolutely progress has been made to make this not only a better place to do business, but to, you know, live, work, and raise a family.
What would you like to see done in 2026?
As we look ahead, you know, our number one priority is ensuring the promise of the LA Gator program. So this is a program that passed that allow every child to attend a school that fits them best, which means dollars that the state is spending on education can follow each child ultimately to the school that fits them best, whether that's a public school, a public charter school, a home school, a parochial school, private school, whatever that may look like for that family. That was passed in 2024, unfortunately not funded in 2025. So really fulfilling that promise to the nearly 40,000 children who qualified for the program, applied, spent time to apply and qualify to raise their hand, make sure the funding actually gets to those kids.
How can that happen without it affecting public schools is a question I get from a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, first answer to that is none of the local dollars are changing. So the local tax dollars, the property tax and sales tax that we spend or collect rather to spend on schools, this doesn't change any of that. This is only dealing with the state dollars. And the same thing is true today that will be true after the full implementation of Gator. If a family decides to move their kid to another school, the dollars will follow. That happens today if you move to a different public school. And if a child unenrolls from the school doesn't get that money either. So nothing changes in that. This just puts power in the hands of families and parents who know their kids best, rather than forcing kids who, to go to school to the zone public school that they live.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up and come back. Talking to Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. End of the year is fast approaching, so we'll talk about 2025, continue to talk about 2025, what stood out for good and bad, and what's on tap for 2026. 720 Traffic Now, WWL. 725 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute, talking about what went right in 2025 and what didn't. What would you say did not go right in 2025, Daniel?
Yeah, you know, a few disappointments there. While there were some good bills and progress on addressing legal abuse and you know, particularly relative to our car and home insurance issues, you know, some good things were left on the table and you know, sort of ended up a couple of steps forward, maybe one step back. So I think good stuff there, but there's still work to do to address the legal climate here in Louisiana, whether it relates to insurance or coastal lawsuits or, you know, a number of places where we see that problem.
Talk about the Streamline Act, if you will, because I saw the position on your website and I got involved in this accidentally last year. And it really is kind of ridiculous if you try to deposit some cash in a bank.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is one of these bills on the federal level that it supposedly is to help address, you know, drug trafficking and terrorism or something like that. But what happens is, there are thresholds. If you are a small business owner, let's say you run perhaps a restaurant or something that may have a lot of cash, triggers all this red tape and federal review when you deposit somewhat large amounts of cash into the bank. Senator Kennedy has introduced a bill, the Streamline Act, along with Senator Tim Scott, that would raise those thresholds so we at least can keep up with inflation. They haven't changed in a few decades. And it will will remove some of that regulatory red tape burden on particularly our small community banks, and really focus on fighting financial crime rather than just processing a whole bunch of reports.
How low are the thresholds now, Daniel?
They are $10,000 in one category, and $2,000 and $3,000 in another. So it will basically triple all of those. That'll move to $5,000, $10,000, and $30,000.
I know I got caught up in it just because I was saving money, trying to save some cash, and I would save it in big bills, and then I tried to deposit it, and man, they were looking at me like I was Pablo Escobar or something. It's like,
that's
come
right.
on, man, what are you doing? I just saved a couple of bucks here, and I'm just trying to put it in the bank. What do you call it? All of these people over here for
Kingpin Tommy?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Tell me about 2026. What would you like to see done?
Yeah, so, another big thing for 2026, we've been talking about for a long time past as part of Amendment 2 in late 2024, but of course not implemented, and that is what we call a government growth limit. We believe that, the spending of our state government has grown much faster than our population and inflation, and, the state budget has grown about 80% over the last decade. So what a government growth limit would do would be something very common sense. It says we've got to constrain the growth of recurring spending to inflation and population. So as population grows, as we have to keep up with inflation, of course, we can spend a little more. But we've got to focus on core priorities to make sure we can accomplish big objectives, fixing infrastructure for one, and for another, to continue to lower tax burdens on our families and, get the state in a good place.
I just hope Pete Hegseth doesn't take me out.
That's right. You better watch out.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, Tommy.
Appreciate
Have a great
your
day.
Time. All right, Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. Sunday, Saints Battle of Bucks in Tampa. You can start your game day at 8 o'clock with Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and the Caesars Sportsbook First Take. Then at 10 o'clock, join Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. They'll break down the matchup. Game time's at high noon with Deuce and Haas featuring Jeff Nowak on the sideline. And do yourself a favor, turn down that TV and turn up the radio. Then after the game, sound off at the Cajun Cannon on the point after. If you love football, we got it for you. 10 hours of wall-to-wall black and gold coming your way. Saints-Bucks Sunday on WWL and live on the free Odyssey app. We'll come back, talk about LSU recruiting and signing. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 7:45, quarter till 8. Been a busy couple of weeks for LSU. Wilson Alexander joins us now, LSU beat writer for The Advocate, joins us to talk about all that. How you doing, Wilson? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. What do we know about Lane Kiffin's contract?
It is a 7-year, $91 million deal. It will pay him $13 million a year, which makes him the second highest paid coach in the country behind Georgia's Kirby Smart. And it includes an automatic escalator that if he were to win a national title, it would then automatically make him the highest paid coach in the country. And those are just some of the things. There's more in there about the buyout, and there's even an interesting clause where if whatever Ole Miss does in the playoff, LSU is going to pay Lane Kiffin the bonuses that he would have made had he stayed at Ole Miss.
Wow.
$150,000 for them playing a first-round game, and if they were to go and win a national title without him, he'd get $1 million.
See, that's why I wouldn't be a very good negotiator, because $13 million a year, I'd be happy. I wouldn't care about the rest of it.
Well, you're not Jimmy Sexton, then.
No, that's true. Exactly. The agent's got to get his cut. When this buyout, as far as this buyout thing goes, there's kind of like the devil's in the details with this, because in a way it's a a victory over the Brian Kelly deal because it's 80%, not 90%, but it's also based on what he goes on to do if he leaves LSU, right?
Well, no, not quite really. There's no mitigation. Yeah, there's no mitigation or offset clause in this one, whereas there was a mitigation offset clause in Brian Kelly.
I said it backward, but that's what I was trying to say.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's that guarantees Lane Kiffin would make however much was left in the buyout. Whereas obviously with Brian Kelly, now that that situation has been resolved, if he were to ever get another job, which LSU expects him to try to do, then that buyout will be reduced by the, you know, offset by the salary in the next job. That wouldn't be the case here with Lane Kiffin, at least according to the term sheet, too. We'll see if anything looks different in the full contract. That'll be interesting to see, but at least in the term sheet, that's what it says right now.
Is this public record? Who is Lane Kiffin's contract with?
It's with LSU.
Okay. So as a result, it is public record, and we'll be able to see the intimate details of it?
Yeah, that's how I obtained it. I made a public records request.
All right, and you've read the entire thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you have signed it in a heartbeat?
If I was Lane Kiffin, yeah.
In a heartbeat, yes.
Definitely. I would have signed it for half of that.
Exactly. Let's talk about the recruiting period and signing days, because there's a couple of different ones. And at what point is a player definitely bound to LSU or any university?
When they sign their documentation and send it off to LSU. It's a little different than it used to be. I mean, mm-hmm. with the transfer portal, January 2nd, if a guy wanted to, and within a month they could enter the portal. But if they've signed and LSU has announced them, then they're pretty much bound at this point.
So who did the Tigers sign?
Yesterday? They signed 10 different guys yesterday. And we're still waiting on the paperwork to kind of be announced for Richard Anderson, the number one defensive lineman out of Edna Carr. He said yesterday he was signing with LSU, but LSU hasn't quite announced hasn't announced that yet, which is a little curious today, kind of starting into the day why that hasn't happened yet. Kind of try to get to the bottom of that. But yeah, 10 different guys. I mean, I could read off the list of names if you wanted to.
So in this day and age of NIL, could the guy from Carr be negotiating a better deal? That's what he's holding out for?
Not necessarily. That kind of would be done by this point. When you put pen to paper, that's part of it, really. I mean, there's...
But the fact that he hasn't, though, right? He hasn't put pen to paper yet.
Well, we watched him put pen to paper yesterday at Edna Carr, but the paperwork hasn't been sent in. So,
okay.
But I don't know exactly where that stands fully. But to your question about revenue sharing and NIL and all that, like, those negotiations get done ahead of time and have been getting worked out with LSU and all those things. And that's part of kind of what gets wrapped up when once they're signing, that stuff is usually done.
So now we're parsing, at what point does it become legal and binding? Because he put the pen to the paper, but was somebody there from LSU to witness it? At what point, if I sign a contract with you, but I don't send you a copy or you don't sign it, does that make it binding? I mean, are we at that point quite, Wilson, or not?
I'm a little lost with this line.
What I'm saying is I'm confused as to whether or not you said he put pen to paper, but what does that mean? He put pen to what paper? Is he committed to LSU or not? Because if he's not, at what point does he become committed to LSU? What did he sign exactly, and was an LSU representative there?
I don't know that an LSU representative there was there. That stuff usually gets faxed in.
What I'm saying is he can tear it up. Here's what I'm saying. He can sign whatever he wants, but it's not legally binding until LSU gets it or until he sends it in. So he could still be negotiating, could he not?
I suppose. I don't know exactly what's going on.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. 751, 9 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. Wilson, I didn't mean to draw you into contracts 101. I'm still hurting from the Bryce Underwood thing, and I'm just, I don't know when the fish is in the boat until it's in the ice chest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. And to, if I can, maybe I can provide a little bit of clarity. So,
okay.
You know how athletes used to sign national letters of intent? They did away with that last year.
Right.
What they're signing now are financial aid agreements, and those are basically contracts with the school. That's sort of something that got changed because of the revenue sharing era that we're in. So,
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Once that gets signed and sent in, they are bound to the school. But because of the way college sports works now, they could also technically enter the transfer portal in from January 2nd to the 15th if they so desired. But that's about as much as I know about it.
I got you. So when it comes to Brown and Alexander, could Blake Baker's future have something to do with this, as far as, because now he's in the conversation to be Tulane's new head coach?
Yeah, our understanding is that the uncertainty around his future and some other staff members as well. LSU's defensive line coach, it's unclear exactly who that will be. Frank Wilson, we don't know what decision yet is going to be made around his future at LSU, whether or not he'll be retained as the running back coach. And so, as I understand, especially with Lamar Brown right now, he has held off on doing anything, even having a signing ceremony, until he kind of sees what that situation is going to be. And for Lamar Brown, he's not an early enrollee, so he can wait until February, and nothing really changes for him. They're both still committed to LSU. And again, Richard Anderson had a signing ceremony yesterday in which he very publicly said he was going to LSU and signing with LSU. But that's kind of the thing going into yesterday, and why there might've even been a delay with Richard Anderson that didn't end up happening, which was, the uncertainty around the staff.
Get him in the ice chest. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, Wilson. Get him in the ice chest, close the lid on it, let him flop around in there, and then we'll be good. What do you think when it comes to quarterback, and we only have a couple of seconds left here, do you think Lane Kiffin goes shopping all over the country, six of the SEC? What do you think?
Well, they're going to try to flip Landon Duckworth from South Carolina, so they actually have a quarterback in this class, but they're going to shop all over the country for one in the transfer portal for sure. It'll be interesting to see if Trinidad Chambliss gets a waiver for another year at Ole Miss. I certainly think that Lane Kiffin will be making a call there.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. We'll talk about Medicare annual enrollment when we come back. We'll also talk to Joe Geruso. And you can also text us at 504-260-1870. What's your favorite cookie on the store shelf? It is 8:13 now. It's Medicare annual enrollment period, but not for a lot longer. If you want to change your Medicare coverage for 2026, be sure to review your options and make a decision by this Sunday, December 7th. That's the deadline. Nick Carl joins us from People's Health with some tips. Morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm great, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's jump right in. What are the main choices for Medicare coverage?
Yeah, so simply, it's really there's two main options for people to choose. They can choose to go the original Medicare route, or they can choose a Medicare Advantage plan. And original Medicare, it's administered by the federal government, while Medicare Advantage plans are offered by private health insurance companies that have a contract with Medicare. And that's really the main ways you can receive your Medicare coverage.
What does original Medicare cover?
So it covers kind of most medically necessary services in your traditional, you know, hospital settings, doctor offices, and other healthcare facilities. But it doesn't cover Part D prescription drugs or some of the routine services that people like, you know, dental, vision, and hearing. So that's why many people enroll in Medicare Advantage plans, because these plans cover everything that original Medicare covers, but it also offers some of those extra benefits.
What kind of extra benefits?
So it really depends, because every plan is different, but most cover routine eyewear and hearing aids. They cover fitness centers at no cost to the member. And some even cover things, you know, for over-the-counter items and wellness items. Some even cover healthy food items. So there's a lot of extra benefits that you can receive on a Medicare Advantage plan.
Do any of them include Part D coverage?
Yes. So most of them, most Medicare Advantage plans do cover Part D coverage as well. That's a good point. So you don't have to enroll in a standalone prescription drug plan when you're on a Medicare Advantage plan.
So let's talk about costs. Is Medicare Advantage more expensive than original Medicare?
Not necessarily. So again, like I mentioned, every plan has different costs and benefits. But your overall costs with a Medicare Advantage plan are often lower than what you would get on the original Medicare. So because of this, original Medicare Advantage plans are required to limit your yearly out-of-pocket cost, while original Medicare has no ceiling. So, I mean, you could see some pretty high yearly expenses.
What else is different between original Medicare and Medicare Advantage?
So original Medicare allows you to visit any doctor or hospital that accepts Medicare anywhere in the U.S. And that's a big difference, where a Medicare Advantage plan often have network of providers and healthcare facilities that, you know, usually require the member to use those. So that's one big, big difference. Medicare Advantage plans also may require referrals or, you know, for you to see a specialist. Some require prior authorizations for some medical services and prescription drug coverage. And really, a prior auth, that's a term that most people may not know. It means that you must get approval from your health plan before it pays the cost of a service. So in many cases, original Medicare does not have those, or a Medicare Advantage plan does.
We're talking with Nick Carl, who is helping us from People's Health to help you review your Medicare coverage, because you got to make a decision by December 7th. What advice would you have for making Medicare coverage decisions, Nick?
Yeah, to me, people need to understand that Medicare plans aren't really a one-size-fits-all. Everybody has different priorities and preferences. So you need to really think about what's most important to you. Maybe that's predictable cost. Maybe that's more robust drug coverage or lower cost to see a specialist. So now is really the time to do research. You need to read more. You need to figure out kind of understanding what may be offered to you under original Medicare versus a Medicare Advantage plan. And you need to think about what's best for you to meet your needs. And, you know, your list of priorities can really help with this. And then talk to a Medicare expert, right? We've got licensed agents all over the state of Louisiana that sell all the different lines of Medicare Advantage and Medicare Supplement and Part D. And talk to somebody and have them help you. You know, the Louisiana Department of Insurance has their senior health information program or their SHIP program. You could call one of those counselors and they could help you as well. So it's you don't have to make this decision in a bubble. Use the resources that are out there to help you.
Seems like it can get kind of complicated, though. For people interested in Medicare Advantage, how would you go about choosing the plan that's right for you?
Yeah, so as your listeners know, there's many different Medicare Advantage plans that are available in Louisiana, and choosing one can be pretty intimidating, right? But it's not as hard as you think. So some of the ways is to check the cost, you know, review whether a plan has a premium or deductibles, review and just make sure that plan fits your budget. You also probably want to take a look and consider what the coverage is. Make a list of the healthcare services that you most often use and make sure that those are covered and make sure that they're covered at a cost that meets your budget as well. And then if those extra benefits are important to you, make sure that those are covered, right? Make sure that you're covered for dental and vision and hearing and some of those extra benefits. You know, a popular one is the fitness center membership. And as we talked about, make sure that that Part D drug coverage meets your needs as well. Make sure that your drugs are covered and, again, are covered at a cost that meets your needs.
All right, we'll talk about some other things you can do when we come back. It is the Medicare annual enrollment period, but not for much longer. If you want to change your Medicare coverage for 2026, be sure to review your options and make a decision by this Sunday, December 7th. Nick Carl with People's Health is here with some tips. He'll tell us, what else we can do when it comes to choosing a Medicare Advantage plan. When we come back, 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Medicare annual enrollment period. But if you want to change your Medicare coverage for 2026, be sure to review your options and make a decision by Sunday, this Sunday, December 7th. Nick Carl is here from People's Health with some tips. We've talked about some advice for making Medicare coverage decision, knowing that one size doesn't fit all. That Medicare plans, one size don't fit all. You got to do some research, talk to an expert. And for people interested in Medicare Advantage, when it comes to choosing a plan that's right for you, you got to check the cost. You got to consider the coverage. You got to ask about extra benefits. What are some other things you can do, Nick?
Yeah, something else you could do is you could explore your plan's network, right? Make sure that the doctors that you're currently seeing or that you maybe want to see are in the network and will continue to be in the network for 2026. And if not, does that plan let you see out-of-network doctors, right? There are some plans that do allow out-of-network coverage where there are others that don't. So make sure you understand kind of what you're enrolling in. You can take a look and review the plan types that are out there. They can affect your cost, and the benefits available to you can differ. So, for example, some Medicare Advantage plans are specially designed for people who have chronic long-term health conditions like diabetes or heart disease. Other plans that are out there for people that are on Medicare and Medicaid that bring down your costs. So if you're eligible for some of those, you know, special needs plans, as we call them, take a look and see if you can enroll in one of those plans. And last, I would say kind of talk to your family and friends and loved ones. While every plan is different and meets people's individual needs differently, word of mouth can kind of help you understand whether that plan supports and offers the services and customer service and whether that's high quality and meets your needs. So talk to your friends and neighbors and find out kind of what maybe they're receiving and what their experience is with that as well.
Some great tips. Any final advice, Nick?
Yeah, I would just say start doing your research if you haven't done it. We've been in this period, you know, since October 15th, but it does end on Sunday. So take a look. Don't miss that deadline of December 7th. It's the only time really annually that most people can change how they receive their Medicare. So get that homework done. Take a look and make that decision by December 7th so your coverage can start on January 1st for the next year.
In a couple of minutes that we have left, talk about the People's Health plans, how people can find out more about it, and specifically about the People's Health Medicare Center in Metairie.
Yeah, so we have our Medicare Center in Metairie at 3017 Veterans Boulevard. It's between kind of Causeway and Trader Joe's right there on that corner. We have licensed agents there that can help you with your needs. Appointments are recommended. You could call us and schedule an appointment, but we also allow people to walk in. And also our plan members that maybe, you know, have questions about their benefits and how they're going to change in 2026. We have member service reps that are there that can help with that as well. So if you visit our website at peopleshealth.com, all of the resources and everything that we've talked about this morning are on there. You can take a look at our plan materials, our networks, all those things. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-978-9765. Again, 1-800-978-9765. And we have licensed agents on the phones that can help you and guide you and help you make a decision.
And I know with the center, it's better sometimes to go in and sit down and have it laid out in front of you, this, that, the other thing. Appointments are recommended, but you do have facilities or the staff to handle walk-ins, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we're happy to help people as they walk in and offer the services that they need.
Beautiful. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. It's a nice facility, the People's Health Medicare Center in Metairie 3017 Vets between North Causeway and Trader Joe's. Appointments, as we say, are recommended, but walk-ins are welcome. You can also go to peopleshealth.com, or you can find out more by calling People's Health at 1-800-978-9765. We're going to take a break. We come back, we'll talk to Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, going to be the CAO for a period with new mayor-elect Helena Moreno's administration. And also, I'm still taking your text at 504-260-1870 on this National Cookie Day about what's your favorite cookie. And I got an interesting question about a cookie as to whether or not people actually eat it or just pass it around from person to person. Kind of like a fruitcake. I'll explain it when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Make no mistake about it, rain is on the way, and it'll be here today and tomorrow intermittently and through Saturday morning. We'll have to see what happens with all the Saturday morning activities, specifically the Manning Family Children's Holiday Parade, but we're in touch, and we'll let you know as soon as we know anything. Joe Geruso joins us now, New Orleans City Council member. How you doing, Joe?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Congratulations on being the CAO. You're going to be there for, what's the deal with your being the CAO in Mayor elect Moreno's administration?
Well, look, it's a strange position to be in where you're a council member for 39 more days and being named as a CAO. I said during the press conference, District Day, you will not be getting special treatment over the next month or so. Don't ask for it. But look, it's a real opportunity to get to work right now, meet with people, hear what's going on. That's obviously been happening since the announcement. It's intensified because people have ideas. People want to share things. They have really good thoughts about better practices and how things can work better. So it's trying to simultaneously manage making sure as we button up the last part of the term that gets taken care of, and then, of course, getting ready for Mayor-elect Moreno's administration.
So I think while the city isn't a hell of a mess, I think it could have been a lot worse were it not for the fact that the council member at large is the mayor-elect and that people like you are willing to hang around and see it through the reorganization, if you want to call it that. I know it's not officially a reorganization, but maybe like trying to get the ship back on course?
Yeah, well look, you started off by saying it is a hell of a mess. So let's not downplay the fact that you have to pay back the money to the state. We have to stabilize the city's finances and plan for the future and deliver services and improve morale. So let's not let that go all by the wayside. With that said, what I've reminded people is the mayor-elect and others have been hard at work on getting the revenue anticipatory note and working with leaders like President Senator Henry and Councilmember Morrell and state officials, making sure that New Orleans would control its finances through that process and working closely with the legislative auditor. And then really, Tommy, rewriting the budget in almost a month and finding $75 million in new revenue to really help augment this budget so the cuts weren't even more drastic than they were. So what I've sort of said is that's sort of the 30 to 45 days things that have happened, and you don't have your full complement and team around you to do that. So I actually think given the big hairy mess that is being inherited, it's pretty impressive what's been done in the short period of time.
Yeah, I wish you wouldn't use that phrase, because I'm going to move on to the current mayor and the petulance and what's going on with the revenue estimating committee or conference. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's 8:50, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:56, 4 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Councilman Joe Geruso. Let's talk about this revenue estimating conference that was supposed to happen. I'm a little bit confused as to what was the point of it and what the mayor, current mayor, Cantrell, I forgot her name because I haven't seen her in a while, what Mayor Cantrell was doing or gotten away of. Explain all of this to me, Joe, if you would, please.
Yeah, sure. So the Revenue Estimating Conference is essentially to recognize a forecast of revenue for the upcoming year. And it's not binding per se, but you do want to have something formal because you want people to be able to weigh in. You want to show your work. You want to show, are their numbers too aggressive? Are they too conservative? What's going on? So it is an ideal accountability, transparent thing that is created to make sure everyone is informed. We emailed the mayor and her team early the week of Thanksgiving saying we're working on these numbers for REC, which, by the way, are things that we learned from the administration or by being involved in government. And this is a way to increase revenue from the city. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, we gave numbers publicly. I was on Newell's show mm-hmm. where I listed them one by one by one. Wednesday, we sent an email to the administration detailing the information. Friday, we sent the presentation. We worked over the weekend. And again, we sent the last PowerPoint presentation probably 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday because we were working around the clock. We offered to meet on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday before the meeting, and the mayor wouldn't do it. So how do you help people who don't want to be helped?
Does it affect Mayor-elect Moreno's administration and all, or what she – I guess what I'm wondering is what effect does that have on moving forward? Is the mayor, current mayor, kind of just like trying to drag everything down as much as she possibly can? Or explain this to me, Joe, in layman's terms.
Yeah, the easiest way I can explain it is if you look at the language in the charter, the Revenue Estimating Conference is a recommendation. And so the council is free to deviate from it as long as data and information back it up. But here's the thing, Tommy. You want to make sure your forecast matches what you're actually budgeting for because that's just better governance. And to that end, what Mayor-elect Moreno has said is she's going to call a revenue estimating conference right after her inauguration, approve those numbers, and then that way everything is aligned between the forecast and what the actual budget is.
Okay. So really no effect?
No real effect other than, sort of like the theater of not doing it. But I think the effect is the failure to try to move the city forward and find more revenue to help us out of this mess.
Do you understand why that would happen? She would do what she did?
I don't. I understand principle fights. I don't understand fighting for no reason.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, it's one thing if you're gonna accomplish something, right? If you're gonna get something out of it, I get that. But just to be obstinate, I don't understand that at all. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, about the Saints injury report and about taking on the Bucks this Sunday. Then we'll talk about the Pelicans and Zion Williamson's latest injury. You still got a couple of minutes to text us your favorite cookie, 504-260-1870. I'll give you the top five. Tommy's top five at 9 when we return. Right now we pause for WWL First News. And you don't want that to happen, not at all. All right, let's talk to Steve Geller here, WWL Sports Director. How you doing, Steve?
Doing good, Tommy. I got to stay away from those Oreos. I treat them like poker chips. I get like a stack and bring them with me to the table.
That's exactly right, because you start to eat one, right? And it's like, well, you know, maybe just one more, and then maybe just one more. Then you start telling yourself that package is not as big as it used to be. So, yeah, maybe I ate a whole package of them, but it's not like it used to be a whole package of Oreos, and then before you know it, you're buying bigger pants. Hey, let me remind people of this real quick if I can, Steve. Thanks to everybody who joined us yesterday for the day one of the Manning Family Children's Light Up the Season Radiothon. We're so grateful for your generous donations. You can listen to some of the touching moments from our 14-hour broadcast, including sports talk, online at WWL.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And WWL Social, you can still donate by calling 888-780-8811 or text NOLA Kids to 34984 or give at manningchildrens.org/radiothon. And if you can be a miracle maker, that's less than 50 cents a day, a $180 one-time contribution, or I think it comes out to $15 a month. And Magic 101.9 is out there today. B97 is going to be there today. And then Bayou 95.7 is going to be there tomorrow with Manning Family Children's Hospital. Let's talk about the Saints. I hate to say hospital to injuries, but what are they looking like injury-wise, Steve?
Yeah, we got the initial injury report for Week 14 yesterday, and not looking so great. As expected, though, Alvin Kamara still on there, dealing with an ankle and a knee issue. Didn't practice. Actually, all four names that I'm going to rattle off here did not practice yesterday, so we'll find out a little bit more of their status when today's injury update comes out. But like I mentioned, Alvin Kamara, knee and ankle. Taliese Fuaga, ankle issue. And bad news, Kellen Moore spoke yesterday after practice and talking about this isn't the same ankle that Fuaga has been dealing with. Last game, he injured his other ankle. So that's something to monitor for him. Chris Olave still dealing with his back issue. And then we saw safety Justin Reed go down in that game last week in Miami, and he's dealing with a knee issue.
Let me say this about Chris Olave. You know, so many times we see a player should have made this catch, want to be number one receiver, should do that. But we don't know what these guys are playing with, right? And the last thing to worry you want to do is publicize it, because the NFL, being of the nature that it is, if they sense a weakness, they're going to put their boot on it as quickly as they possibly can. So you got to kind of keep that tucked in. You don't want anybody to know about it. So while we examine players and judge them on their efforts, sometimes we don't realize what it is that they're up against.
Yeah, it is tough, Tommy. Everybody wants to point to that play. Obviously, at the end of the game, you have a chance to make a game-winning touchdown grab, and it just went through his hands. It didn't seem like there was even, you know, the defender goes by him, so it's not even really a contested catch there in that scenario. Yeah, I give Olave a ton of credit playing through the injury. But man, oh man, you see that thing over and over again. It's so aggravating and frustrating, because it's like, how can you not make this catch? And that that conversation definitely comes up with Olave a ton, where people don't consider him a true number one wide receiver, and he's looking to get paid next year. So something like that in the game against the Dolphins, when that goes through your hands in a game-winning scenario, not the greatest look for you as a wideout. And I'm sure, you know, with fans are so ticked off, I'm sure Chris is ticked off at himself as well.
So Kellen Moore, Saints officially eliminated from the playoffs. You got games coming up against Tampa Bay, you host Carolina and the Jets, then you go to Tennessee, close it out in Atlanta. What do you think he hopes to accomplish in these last five games?
Well, for me, Tommy, at least I want to see more of this development from Tyler Shuck. This is all about Shuck for me this last stretch here. We're seeing a lot of good things right now. Can he continue to build on that? It looks like you're going to have a top five minimum at least pick in the NFL draft. Definitely top 10, I'll say, because we'll see how things shake out here in the rest of the games they have against some lesser opponents. But do you, with that number one first round pick, do you want to go after another quarterback? And you look at the names in this draft, you're looking for QB-wise, Fernando Mendoza from Indiana, Ty Simpson of Alabama, mm-hmm. and then even Dante Moore from Oregon, I think your top signal callers in this draft. Are you going to spend your first round pick there, or are you going to take maybe some phone calls of teams that are that interested in one of these QBs, trade back a little, get some more draft assets, or like we've seen the same Saints before too, they might just stick with that pick, whatever they have, and take whatever is the best available for them. But that knowing if you have your signal caller of the future is vital to me right now. And Shuck right now, I like what I'm seeing. I'm still positive about him at least, and just want to see more of that development going forward.
It's a fine line between you don't want to tank, right? You got to try to win the games. You can't go out there and say, okay, guys, let's try not to get hurt, because that's when you're going to get hurt. But not that the coach would ever say that. But I would think it's almost a position like a preseason game. I hate to say this. God, I hate to say this. But where you want to put Tyler Shuck in different positions just to see what he can do under different circumstances. Agreed or not?
Absolutely. I want to see every single scenario you can dream up in football and put him in. That's why I've questioned not so much last game, the previous matchup for the Saints, where you saw in the red zone situations, they brought Taysom Hill in taking Tyler Shuck out. And it's like, I want to see how this rookie does mm-hmm. in these scenarios, especially if he's going to be this guy going forward. Taysom, he's that luxury piece. We haven't seen much from him this season right now, unfortunately, but keep Shuck out there for me. I want to see this rookie in the red zone, the two-minute drill, whatever you want to say in these finals, few games for the Saints. Any kind of development you're seeing for him going into next year has to be the number one priority for this team right now. You mentioned eliminated the playoffs. You're not playing for a thing right now except for team pride. Guys earning their paychecks, and no, nobody is checked out and cashing in, because like you mentioned too, that's when people get really hurt, mm-hmm. when you're not trying.
And it's on tape, and everybody's got, you know, that's their body of work. I fully understand that. I'm not saying anybody's checking out or anything like that. But I do think that at this point, the coaching staff has to do everything they can to evaluate players to put the team in the best position that they possibly can next season, which means knowing what they have now so they know how to proceed, right?
Yeah, Tommy, I think we're seeing a lot of the young guns getting run in this year for the Saints because of injuries, because of necessity, or just because, too, you want to see what the young guys have, the rookies and the second-year players. Kellen Moore's evaluating this, trying to build his roster for next year. This is definitely far from a work in progress. I think everybody sees that this team needs a ton of work in the offseason.
What do you think the running back position is going to look like next year?
Ooh, man, Tommy. We're seeing some good things from Devin Neal right now. Hopefully this sixth-round pick continues to develop and show us things, but I definitely think you need to be active in free agency and the draft, trying to get somebody some guys in here, because right now Alvin Kamara, even before these injuries, and I don't know, maybe the ankle was a problem before the knee became the major issue, he hasn't looked like the same guy this year. Everybody talks about that 29-year-old wall for a running back, and unfortunately he doesn't just have that magic to him anymore. So you definitely need to invest early or like I said, in free agency in that running back position, because right now it has just been awful. And a lot of it is the offensive line too, but man, oh man, there's just this, since I've been covering the team, Tommy, which was the magical Super Bowl year, was my first year full-time covering the Saints, I've never seen the running game this bad for them.
In fairness to AK, he's like a, you know, you see these police units that they take the numbers off of them and then they turn into a cab. That's kind of like what Alvin Kamara is in terms of running back and the mileage that he's got on him. This guy has given it all, and you in no way can criticize Alvin Kamara for any part of anything. And it's amazing, I think, that his career has lasted as long as it has, considering the way he played, and I think that's owed to his training regimen.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. We saw those balance videos with his trainers we used to see online, and the dedication, the passion that he has. He's a great interview as well. One of my favorite players on this team, but just right now, this season, he has not been that same dude, unfortunately.
Let's talk about Devon Vele. What have you seen from him?
Yeah. Hallelujah. We had a breakout game from him last week in Miami, and hope that continues. You know, he came to the Saints in that trade from Denver and was dealing with an injury early on and was learning a new system, a new way here in New Orleans. So there was a little bit of growing pains expected. It did take a longer than I could have imagined for him to get involved in this offense. We saw it last week, 8 targets, 8 catches, 98 yards, a touchdown, even recovered the onside kick. Mm-hmm. So a great day for him. And, yeah, the big target that this Saints team needs, Tyler Shuck, I'm sure loves going to 6'5". That beautiful pass in the end zone. Mm-hmm. Watch that over and over again, because a beautiful placement, great catch by him. But you need this big physical type possession receiver, especially on this roster where there just isn't that kind of guy. Vele is one of a kind here on the Saints roster right now.
All right, let me take a break. We'll talk about Charlie Smith and the Bucks when we come back, talking to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. The Saints, of course, taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tampa. You can start your game day at 8 o'clock with Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and the Sears Sportsbook First Take. Then at 10 o'clock, you can join the Cannon, Bobby Hebert and Steve Geller for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. They'll break down the matchup game time. High noon, Deuce and Hoss, Jeff Nowak on the sideline, turn down the TV and turn up WWL. It is a tradition. Then after the game, sound off at the Cajun Cannon on the point after. If you love football, we got it for you. 10 hours of wall-to-wall black and gold coming your way. Saints Bucks Sunday on WWL and on the free Odyssey app. More when we return on WWL. 9:28, back to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. What you got going on this evening, Steve?
I'm going to be back at the Treasure Chest Casino. We were off for Thanksgiving, obviously, and just getting into the National Signing Day, the latest from all that in LSU, as well as getting ready for Tulane playing this weekend, and of course, Saints versus Bucks.
Tell me about Charlie Smith, because I'm going to tell you what, if I'm Kellen Moore, damn the season. I know what is out there free agent-wise with Cade York, no disrespect to him at all, but I'm saying, Charlie, you're our guy, buddy. Here's the deal. You did it in one NFL game. I'm going to put you in different circumstances. I'm going to see what you can do, because he came through on a field goal and the onside kick.
Yeah, that was impressive, that spin on the ball for the onside kick for the black and gold. Something about that stadium, too. And being able to get onside kicks is something. But, yeah, with Charlie Smith, he's expected to be the kicker for the Saints again this week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was elevated from the practice squad. And so after the game, he automatically reverts back to the practice squad from the active roster. And while that hasn't been made yet, that procedural move I expect to get done. And like you mentioned, I think Charlie's your guy the rest of the year. Ride him out, see what you got from him. You've been developing the kid from Ireland, and I love seeing the social media footage of the pubs in Ireland celebrating after his 56-yarder. So go ahead, Charlie Smith.
Charlie, go ahead and kick it through the upright sled. Let's talk about the secondary. What should fans be excited about going forward? Jonas Sanker, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Quincy Riley?
Yeah, I've been impressed with Kool-Aid. I think he's done pretty well over the last couple of games. And Quincy Riley, man, I thought he should have gotten that interception. Unfortunately, did not go in the Saints' way last game against the Dolphins. But overall, you're seeing a lot of, you know, development from these guys, which we had talked about before. And I don't know. I think that you see a lot of good things from the secondary. The biggest key for me is definitely being able to get that pressure on the opposing quarterback, and Baker Mayfield is going to be no different this weekend. He's going to have back in the mix. We didn't see last time in Chris Godwin Jr. He should be able to play. And then also in running back, Bucky Irving didn't play last game. He's back for the Bucks too, but need to affect Baker, get him uncomfortable, and he's dealing with the shoulder issue. So give him the business a little, rough him up, and hopefully take him to the ground some and cause him some aggravation, because takeaways are going to be key. We talk about that, I think, every game as well. And, man, ad nauseum, this Saints team, please score some points in the first quarter. These slow starts for them have just buried the black and gold this year.
Yeah, what can they do to get started more quickly?
You know, I don't know. I joke with my partner on the Inside Black and Gold podcast, sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. You know, they come out with a script every game that they have plays set. I just toss that out and come out with your halftime plan to start. I really don't know, Tommy. It's so frustrating to see the team going three and out in the first quarter, and you get into a double-digit hole that you have to dig out of right away, and it's not great for a rookie quarterback, any quarterback in general. And like I said too before, the lack of a run game is hurting this squad too. Kellen Moore's at least committed to getting the attempts. We just need to rip off some more yardage. No 2-3 yard gains. I'd like to rip off, you know, I haven't seen an 8-9 yard run, I feel like, forever.
What kind of season's been for Danny Stutzman? Because I was excited when the Saints got him.
Yeah, we saw him make a really nice play, actually tackling the running back last week in Devon Achan, who is running all over the Saints. But I like Stutzman, what he brings, his coverage ability on the field, the speed that he brings from sideline to sideline you hear about. You know, when you see this guy out there too, he's bringing that energy and is a great tackler. So I think a lot of great things are ahead of him that we see developing. And that's a thing. Overall, this rookie class, we've seen so many contributions this year, out of necessity too, but I feel like the Saints did a lot of good things in this year's draft, building forward for this roster. It's just the being patient and taking those baby steps going forward, and Stutzman, I think, is a stud. Stutzman the stud.
Yeah, I think so too. Ain't nobody going anywhere or throwing anything if the offensive line's not playing up to par. Tell me what you think the offensive line's likely to look like next year, or what they're likely to do.
Well, I'm hoping that Eric McCoy can stay healthy. I knew, just like last year, when he went down, we were in a world of trouble, even worse than you could possibly imagine, not having your center. And I'm sure you've talked to Mike Dettillier tons, too, of what it means not having your starting center around. And Eric McCoy, he might be the best player on this team. So not having him around, too, is a major impact. Like I said, went into the third game last year, went down in the Eagles game, and we saw the struggles this team had, and this year as well. Just the interior, Tommy. I think you got your tackle set with Kelvin Banks Jr. and Taliese Fuaga. But, man, the guards, that needs a lot of work between, you know, whoever you want to have on the one side. And then Cesar Ruiz just has not been getting it done, unfortunately. I'm ready to move on from him and see what you can bring in to beef up that O-line, because I think Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL insider, said it best for us the other day. He's like, you know, the tackles look like young, promising prospects. Meanwhile, your interior, they just look like regular dudes, nothing special.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts, Steve?
Man, I'm looking forward to, like I said, the rest of the way. We only got a couple games left. Try to stay positive, Hoodats, and look for the little things to build off of. And for me, it's the biggest thing, the development of the quarterback in Tyler Shuck. I'm all about the Shuck show and hoping to see more from him, cutting down those turnovers for sure. But the decision-making, his presence in the pocket, and his confidence, I like what the QB's been bringing. And, you know, a lot of folks have even been calling him the best rookie in this year's draft class. I think he'd have to compete with a guy like Jackson Dart, who's done some good things as well. But, man, just keep on riding the Shuck train, and hopefully we see great things from him, and the Saints can spend that first-round pick on some assets around him and not worrying about another signal caller.
And let's hope we develop a Charlie Smith, too, the young man from Ireland, that he turns into a a weapon, a force to be dealt with. Thank you, Steve Geller. We'll listen for you this evening from the Treasure Chest Casino, starting at 4 with Mike Dettillier. Head on out there, join him, or listen here at WWL. We'll take a break, come back, talk about Zion and the Pelicans. Oh, boy. Back in a flash, WWL. 9:43, 17 till 10. The rain has arrived in the city, and it's going to rain for today and tomorrow and into Saturday morning is what they're saying, and neutral ground parking has been approved, if I read the text correctly. Ollie Cosell joins us now, a credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. How you doing, Ollie?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm staying dry, so that's the best part so far about today.
Ollie.
Yes, I know. It's tough to talk about him.
Yeah, it is. You know, somebody told me a long time ago that Zion Williamson, for whatever reason, that before he was drafted, this person told them that he didn't have the body that would withstand an NFL season just because of the way he was put together, this, that, the other thing. I don't remember the specifics, but, man, every time something like this happens, I got to go back to that. This man is having a hard time staying on the court. Weight aside, age aside, tell me about his latest injury. We're talking about Zion Williamson, for those of you that don't know, is injured again.
Yeah, he sustained a grade 1 abductor injury, so he's going to be out for a minimum of 3 weeks. He'll be evaluated after that time frame is up, and typically that injury takes about 3 to 6 weeks to heal. It's another injury. Soft tissue injury for a guy that you just mentioned. There was questions, right, about his durability, especially over an 82-game schedule, and it's showing, right? He came into the season as healthy and as fit as I think we've ever seen him, and he still can't avoid the injury bug because, remember, he's already had other issues this season as well.
He's only played 10 out of 22 games, right?
Mm-hmm. And over his career, Tommy, he's missed 55 to 56% of his games.
So he's missed more than he's played.
Games ever, more than half, exactly.
Wow. So what is the likelihood, I don't know, that the Pelicans move him before the trade deadline, or is anybody interested in him? If you and I are sitting here saying that maybe he doesn't have the body that's built, and look, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just saying what people say, that he doesn't have the body to last for an NBA season. Who would be interested in him?
Yeah, so I know there was interest in him over the summer, despite coming off of just playing, about 30 games last season. And the reason teams will speculate on somebody like him is simply because he represents the best chance to potentially, right, grab a generational talent. You either grab him usually through the draft, or you get lucky through a trade because you're a preeminent destination like Los Angeles was when they landed Luka Doncic in last year's trade. But if you're none of those, then your best bet is to basically do a reclamation project. So if you're a team on the outside looking at the Pelicans, who seemingly every year are injured up and down their roster, you've got to think that perhaps they're not doing the right thing. So maybe if we brought Zion to our place and we have a good history with injury luck, then maybe we can turn his entire career around. So
see,
that's why I think a team would take a chance on him.
And that's the question right there, because it's like, okay, he's missed more games than he's played in. What are you going to do differently to see that he plays in at least as many games as he misses? That would be an improvement right there, right? If you just played in half of them, that would be an improvement. And certainly you would aspire to more than that. So that would then mean that the Pelicans aren't doing something that they could or should be doing from a training aspect, right? And it would seem to me as though they got the best that they can get, and that, you know, all eyes of the NBA are on them. And if they were doing something glaringly wrong, this would have come forward, right?
No, see, I agree with you there. Absolutely. I think the technology, the staff, yes, that is all up to date. The one thing I think that perhaps other teams may think is, say, for instance, you're a Miami Heat with Pat Riley. Everybody you bring through that door, they have a full understanding that they're going to give their best at all times. So that means not only are you training hard, you're also eating correctly. You're checking every box. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if the Pelicans have ever been able, honestly, to do that with Zion, right? I mean, just think about last season. He was suspended for a game because he showed up late to a team flight. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that's definitely not the first time it's happened with him. So when you hear stories like that, like I said, if you're Miami Heat and you think, well, he does that over there, we obviously wouldn't let him do that here. But what about other things, right? So again, it's just, talent is so hard to find. Teams are willing to take a chance. We've seen it happen before in the NBA. That's why, like I said, I wouldn't do it personally, right? But it seems like somebody would. That's usually the case.
Tell me about some bright spots.
So obviously it's the rookies, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like Troy Weaver, Joe Dumars nailed the draft. Jeremiah Fears drafted 7th. Derek Queen in that trade up to get him at 13. So far, there are two of the 5 best rookies. If you look at the latest NBA ladder, they're right up there in the top 5. And you look at their production, and you also see these glimpses of potential star potential out of them. You can see why the Pelicans are so high on them, because they could be a tandem you could build around for in the future, right? They're 2 dominant offensive hubs, who one has incredible passing vision in Derek Queen. The other can get by anybody at any time with his dribble in Jeremiah Fears. So they seem like the type of players that will have a lot of success in this new NBA, right? This up and down, super fast style of game.
You mentioned Jeremiah Fears. I know the Clippers parted ways with Chris Paul. Would the Pelicans have any interest in him to give him any minutes at all to take away from the minutes that Fears is getting?
I don't think so, honestly, Tommy. They would have to promise Chris Paul minutes. And with DeJounte Murray slated to come back next month, you've got still Jose Alvarado. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it happening for a team that's, 3 wins, 19 losses. Yeah. And you've already got DeAndre Jordan, right, a veteran, and Kevon Looney, right? So you've already got several positions allotted for veterans. It just doesn't make sense to add another.
So the worst record in the NBA, how do you turn this around? Can it be turned around? And what would a turnaround look like?
You know, I honestly believe, first of all, if you look at the numbers since James Borrego took over, yes, he's got 1 win, 9 losses, pretty much the same pace as Willie Green. But the team is playing better. They're not getting blown out. Suddenly, they're kind of developing an identity, right? Mm-hmm. They've been in a number of close games, and you see it. Much better rebounding team, much better at pushing the break, right? Since James Borrego took over, they're the 6th fastest team. They were one of the slowest under Willie Green. So they're playing kind of the style that we've been told for the last few years that they should play to. That's why you have hope. Now it's just a matter of fact of finishing off games. And from what I understand, the Pelicans have had just 4 practices since Borrego's took over, and there's a lot of things he wants to install. So, for instance, after yesterday's practice, I found out that during practice, they watched a long film session going over detailing, you know, every mistake, every which way that they should have done something better. But more importantly, they worked on end-of-game possessions. So whether you're up 2 points, whether it's tied, what to do, because these guys haven't done it, honestly, yet this year. So that's going to be important to get them at least in those systems, something they trust. And they're going to have that window coming up, 3 games in the next 5 days, but after that, just 2 games in the next 9 days. So I expect after that period, Tommy, I think we're going to see a better team that's not going to be losing just about every game.
When it comes to Zion, could he be confusing hurt and injury?
Yeah,
when you say soft tissue, that's what makes me wonder that. But go ahead.
Right. No, I think what bothers people is the fact that he probably did something we don't know for sure. We've asked Borrego because we haven't gotten true details yet. But it seems like he got injured in his last game he played in, right? Mm-hmm. Saturday against the Warriors. Problem is, he didn't show up on the injury report till right before that game on Tuesday, right? So the fact of the matter is, what happened during those several days? It seems like he probably sustains a nick or a bruise or some kind of, you know, jolt to his body, doesn't think anything of it. Then he shows up, they do run some tests and discover he's got an actual injury, because this has happened in the past. So to me, I think it's real injuries. He just doesn't see it as such initially, and that's part of the problem. That's why some fans are upset, right? That part's got to get cleared up.
And he's out for how long as it stands now?
It's going to be at least 3 weeks. I think he's going to be more likely out closer to the 6-week mark. 5 to 6, if I had to guess.
So that's going to put us in the 2026.
Right.
Yep. All right, Ollie, thank you. Any final thoughts?
No, just keep watching the rookies. And I'll tell you what, they're playing at least a more exciting brand of basketball, right? They're in every game. They're running up and down. And you can see what the future is, right, in these young kids that are playing now.
A little bit of improvement is all we're looking for. Thank you, sir. Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. 9:53, 7 till 10. We'll find out what Newell's got planned when we come back here on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.